Good afternoon. Welcome to the Thursday afternoon meeting of House Finance. It's about 1:40. Today we will have an overview of the Office of Children's Services. But with us today we have Representative Holm, Representative Kelly, Representative Parker, Co-Chair Meyer, and Co-Chair Chenault. Others, I think, will probably be joining us as we get into this. And before us, Marcy? Kenai, I always want to say Kenai, but I know it's not Kenai. And she's the Deputy Commissioner of Office of Children's Services, and also Carlene Jackson, Deputy Commissioner of DHSS. I think, according to this, we're on teleconference, listen only with Anchorage, Kenai, and the Metsu. Also with us, joining us, we have Representative Wyrock. So, Marcy, if you would like to start, the floor is yours.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you very much for inviting me today to give you an overview of the Office of Children's Services. I believe you have in front of you our presentation, which I will go through. And I'll go through it all, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. In July of 2003, the governor and the commissioner, Joel Gilbertson, who is with us today in the audience as well, combined several programs to form the Office of Children's Services. Combining the old Division of Family and Youth Services with some other programs from public health, the Women, Infant, and Children's Program, which we now call Family Nutrition Services, Healthy Families Alaska, and the Infant Learning Program, all prevention programs. And so we were delighted to be able to look at prevention for the first time, actually, along with child protection. Of course, we still have our child protection part of the office. And in our protection and permanency section, we do screening and investigation of reports of harm. We provide in-home services and family preservation, reunification, adoption, and guardianship services for those children who must come into care. We have out-of-home placement services, which include residential treatment, group homes, and behavioral rehabilitation for those children with behavioral problems. We do recruitment and licensing of both foster and adoptive homes, one of the areas that we're trying to strengthen in the coming year. Independent living services for youth who are aging out of our system so that they begin their journey to responsible adulthood with some skills. Our research evaluation of quality assurance unit and some eligibility determination units that determine the eligibility for federal financing. In FY04, our Family Nutrition Services unit served over 27,000 clients in 30 sites throughout Alaska. Our infant learning program served 1,721 infants and toddlers with developmental delays in FY04. Our healthy families program served 373 families. And in child protection, we conducted 11,202 investigations in 28 sites throughout the state. On any given day, we have approximately 2,000 children in OCS custody. I'll focus most of today's press, or all of the rest of today's presentation, on our child protection program, as I think that's what the committee has requested. And what I think is very important to know is that as I came in, the Federal Child and Family Services Review had occurred in June of 2002. At that time, the federal government sent a team of other states and federal officials in to review 50 cases and for the Child and Family Services Review. And that review consisted of 6 months of preparation doing a comprehensive statewide self-assessment, which included stakeholders from all around the state. We were then given a state data profile, which is based on information that we send to the federal government at least twice a year. And those are demographics about our population, and they relate to outcomes in the area of child protection, child safety, child permanency, and well-being of the children that we care for. They then came in and did an on-site review in June, as I said, of 50 cases and interviewed stakeholders like judges, attorneys, GALs. Some of you may have been involved in those discussions in your community. After the review, we received a final report, and we got that report in about September of 2002. They then gave us several months, and we negotiated with our region to enter into a program improvement plan to address the deficits in Alaska's system. And certainly the report did identify a number of strengths, but the program improvement plan was designed to get us to closer to what the national standards were around the country for safety, permanency, and well-being of children. So we entered into a two-year program improvement plan with our federal region. It began the same day I arrived, on September 1st, 2003, and it will be in effect until August 31st, 2005. And so we're into our second year right now. Alaska, the program improvement plan describes the progress that Alaska needs to make. And if we don't make improvement, we do risk losing federal dollars. Some highlights of the plan, and they are just highlights, and I will try to go through them quickly on pages 7 through 9. In the areas of safety, we needed to change a number of policies and procedures that would reduce repeat maltreatment in our system or for children that we and families that we serve. And the federal government and we hope the public holds us responsible for maltreatment in those cases where we have been involved. There's a lot of abuse that occurs outside of our system that we know nothing about until it is reported. And so by looking at repeat maltreatment, we hold ourselves responsible for those cases where we have done an investigation and found that maltreatment has occurred. We also needed to look at reducing maltreatment of children who are actually in our care and custody. That is, we know that some children were being removed from neglectful homes, coming into our system, and then being neglected again in the system. And so we needed to reduce maltreatment of children by out-of-home care providers. We focused also in the area of safety on activities that would help us respond to all of the reports of harm within our own required time frames. In the area of permanency, we needed to achieve plans of reunification within 12 months of entry, plans of adoption within 24 months. It was noted that we needed to facilitate regular visits between parents and their children, monthly visits between worker and child and worker and parents. And the last two things that I've mentioned are often related to caseload. Our ability to visit parents monthly and to make sure that children are seeing their parents monthly is directly related to our caseloads. We needed to improve the way we do assessments of children and families, so to make sure that they receive not just services, but the services that they truly need. And we have to provide services to foster parents that will enhance their capacity to actually help the children in their home. In the area of well-being, again, it was noted that we needed to do better in support of our foster parents, assure the children in care were receiving all the health, mental health, dental, and educational and medical needs that they brought to us as they came into care, and assure the children in their own homes were receiving planful services as well. That is, when we provide services to a child in their home, it was noted that we did not always have safety plans and case plans for moving that family forward so that the children did not come into care. So those are some areas where we needed to improve. In the broader system area, we were looking at the development of our ORCA system to improve accountability and performance. The development of a comprehensive quality assurance program is a very, very big part of our program improvement plan.
ORCA
is Online Resources for the Children of Alaska, and that is our automated system, which I'm going to talk about just a few minutes, give you some more information on
that. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if we could just, if you get those, it would just tell us what you're talking about. We're old and we don't know these things.
I'm sorry.
Representative Holmes.
I'm older than John.
But before you continue, Representative Stokes has joined us. And also, I didn't see the commissioner sitting back here until you mentioned it earlier, but welcome, Commissioner. Yeah.
Okay. We also need to improve the array of services that are available to our families. So those are all pieces of the program improvement plan. Those are some of the highlights and the things that we have to accomplish by August. On the next page and on the chart back here, I just wanted to show you a little bit of our progress. This is where we began. The national standards for repeat maltreatment in the highlighted sections are the safety areas, which is the area we chose to focus on and place the most emphasis on. So the national standard is 6.1% or less. We were at 23.4 when the feds came in. And so we set a target by September of 2005 to be at 22%. And the feds require you only to set your targets at what you think is doable. We are way ahead of our target. We are at 15.5% and moving down. And so I don't think we'll be at 6.1. I don't think we'll be at the national standard by August of 2005. But we are well on our way to meeting the national standard and within the range of other states like Alaska.
What did you say the national standard
is? The national standard for repeat maltreatment is 6.1. So we're moving in the right direction on safety. The incidence of maltreatment for children who actually come into foster care, the national standard is 0.57, and we were at 1.91 when the feds came in and reviewed us. We again are moving in the right direction. We are at 1.2, again beating our target of 1.7, where we hoped to be by September 2005. So in the areas of safety, we are moving forward and progressing quite well. In the areas of permanency, we are not progressing as fast as I'd like us to, but we are progressing. Our placement stability, the national standard is 86.7% or more. And that means that children will not experience more than two placements in a 12-month period. Our target is 74.6, and we are at 72%. So again, moving in the right direction. We're expected that 76.2% or more of the children who are reunified with their families will be reunified within 12 months. We were at 58% at the time of the federal review, and we have slipped a little bit. We are now at 54.1. Thank you. Okay, are these in their packets as well?
Yeah. Representative Stoller.
Yeah.
Did you have a question?
Yeah, are there any particular problems associated with carrying out the mandates of ICWA? That'd be the Indian Child Welfare Act that are problematic you achieving the percentages you're trying to?
I don't believe ICWA is a major barrier in achieving permanency. We work closely with our tribal partners. In fact, we pass through some federal funding to them so that they can help us with some of our permanency work. But I don't see ICWA as a real barrier.
Is it causing you problems? Is it helping?
Is it helping?
Deal with a dual system?
A dual system?
Well, you sort of, isn't it sort of in a way?
You're talking about solids.
Yeah.
No, it has not been an issue. We do all investigations of child abuse and neglect. A tribe can intervene at the point we go to court to take custody of a child. A child can intervene through the court system to have jurisdiction transferred to the tribal court. That happens sometimes, but not that often. Of the 2,000 children that are in our care and custody, 63% of them at this time are Native children.
I'm sorry, can you, should you repeat that?
Of the 2,000 children that we have in care on any given day, about 63% of those children are Alaska Native children. So ICWA is the Indian Child Welfare Act actually helps us to locate relatives for the Alaska Native children, and we have found that working with our tribal partners has been an advantage in keeping children within their own families. They can often locate relatives that we cannot locate. So I would say it's been a pretty positive experience. Okay. Okay, so we're doing well on, I guess to make a long story short, we're doing well on our safety goals, not quite as well on our permanency goals, but for the most part, moving in the right direction. I wanted to talk a little bit about the investments that the legislature made in the system last year and how that's actually helped us to meet our outcomes and move forward in our program improvement plan. Last year, the legislature gave us 26 new positions, and that really enabled us to begin re-engineering our system. We have been able to reduce our caseloads to an average of 24 cases per worker statewide. And again, that is an average, and I always like to warn people that right now we can only count caseload. Where I'd like to be able to go is to be able to measure workload, because a case in a rural area is very different than a case in Anchorage in terms of the travel needed to actually work with the families in those cases, getting services to those families. Very different in the rural areas than it is in Anchorage. Those 26 new positions also enabled us to address the needs of youth aging out of our system by preparing them for responsible adulthood. We do get some federal money to coordinate some independent living services for youth over the age of 16. But the four new positions that we got last year have enabled us to put regional specialists in each area so that we can make sure every child, at the point they reach their 16th birthday, is given an assessment and develops an independent living plan that will help move him toward independence, so that when he or she leaves our system, they will actually have a plan for housing, education, work, or wherever it is that child needs to go. It's also enabled us to respond in a much more timely way to investigations to assure child safety and to promote permanency for children. This, again, one of the areas that was identified in the final report from the federal government is that we were able to respond to our emergency cases, or what we call our priority ones, but we were not so able to respond to our priority two and three cases. And what we know is that very often cases that begin as a lower priority, if you don't respond in time, often become more serious and become priority ones or emergencies, or in severe cases, sometimes that's when we see child deaths. So it's important to us that we are able to respond to our reports and to do our investigations in a timely way. We've also been able to establish a very vigorous quality assurance program. We are now able to go monthly to a different office to review cases using the same criteria, the same 60-page instrument that the feds use, so that we can work on a regional and on a local level. We can look at what the deficits and strengths are in a particular office and help that office to develop their own program improvement plans. This is a major part of the program improvement plan and a requirement of the feds, but also something that we began but really couldn't establish until we got those 26 positions last year. So I thank you for that. We've also been able to improve supervision for frontline workers. Again, not quite where I'd like to be. We're still at about one supervisor to every seven workers. We'd like to see that be one to five. Supervision is probably the most important level of practice that we have. Other investments in the system. From 2003, 04, and 05, the capital budget reflected a major investment of resources to develop an automated case management and financial payment system for OCS. The planning for online resources for the Children of Alaska, which we call ORCA, began in March of 2003 and went live with our case management module on September 7th, 2004. This was created in 18 months, an unbelievable time frame. And when we went live with the case management piece on September the 7th. We have some bugs, but basically the system is intact. It is working well. We're looking at some new equipment in our rural offices, but it's been quite a change in our system, but is creating the kind of accountability that Alaska has lacked. This allows me as a manager to turn on any given day and know how many children I have, where they are. I can also look at any caseload in Alaska, as can any one of our managers. So this really does bring a level of accountability that we did not have before. Our financial modules, that is our payment system, payments to foster parents, payments to behavioral health providers, will go live on February the 1st. And I believe we're right on target with that. So we now have a state-of-the-art web-based system that will enable workers to manage their cases from their desktops and enable supervisors and managers to hold everybody accountable for their work. The system will also enable us to manage with current data. Our old Prober system, the best we could do is some point-in-time data. It took us quite a bit of time to get that data out of the system. We'll now be able to get, you know, real-time data. So we're really pleased with that. I'd like to talk a little bit about where some of our funding comes from. And Mike, I think the line chart in, I don't know if you, I think there's one in here. It's this one.
Representative Jewell?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I wasn't sure. Sorry, Mike. I wasn't sure where I couldn't exactly at what point we could ask questions.
Whenever you ask.
Okay. I'm sorry, backing up to the 26 new positions, and then I'm sure you're going to be the beneficiary of some of the additional positions that are paid for the treaty request. Do the people who do the actual work, the people in the field make the difference? Do they have the necessary support so that they could stay in the field?
The necessary support. Could you be more specific?
Well, I'm just wondering how much paperwork they're, you know, spending time maybe doing paperwork and
right.
As opposed to mm-hmm. going.
There's a tremendous amount of accountability required in child welfare. And what you will hear, not only in Alaska, but across the country, is our workers, when you become a social worker, you become a social worker because you want to work with people. And so any amount of paperwork is too much. But the reality is there is a lot of paperwork that goes along. Tremendous amount of accountability required to get every federal dollar that we get requires a lot of accountability. Now, ORCA will help automate some of that. So that a lot of the repetition, when workers had to fill out forms and repeatedly write down, you know, a child's name, date of birth, date of entry into care, legal status. So ORCA will streamline a great deal of that. We also do have some positions called social services associates that help to provide some transportation to visits for families and some of the things that will alleviate our social workers from some of the more menial work. Not that transportation is menial, but some of those things. We're getting there. Now ORCA has been, you know, I have to tell you the truth, it's been a culture shock, and workers are, I don't think, yet seeing the benefits of it. They are learning how to put in data, how to enter the data. And for our investigators and our intake workers, it's actually a little more work. But once they get the cases into the system, it becomes less work for the workers down the line. And so there's just been a shift in the workload, and that's one of the reasons I'm so eager to do a workload study. And we hope that we'll be able to begin a workload study here in Alaska sometime in March. I didn't feel it was fair to do that until we had Orca up and stabilized, because we don't know actually what the work is going to look like, the workload is going to look like, until that's stable.
Thank you.
Okay, did I help?
Okay. I understand the reluctance to change.
Yeah, okay. If you look at this chart, you can see that the blue line represents our state funding, which has remained pretty stable since FY03, and our federal dollars are going up. In the child welfare arena, we have access to a pot of funding called 4E funding, which is funding that the federal government makes available to us. It is based on a child's eligibility, but it does reimburse us for some of the care and support, or the foster care payments that go out to our foster parents. So we've been able to raise our what we call our penetration rate, that is the number of children who are deemed eligible, from 41% to 64% at the present time. And we've done that in the last year, so we're really proud of that. We are bringing more federal dollars in. We are also moving some federal dollars to some of our tribal organizations. And we have contracts with, I believe, 9 tribal organizations that help us do some work around ICWA. They've become real partners for us in helping to facilitate some of the visits in the villages, making sure that our children in the villages where we don't have offices, making sure they are safe in the homes where they are. They then send us some reports, and we can reimburse those organizations for some of the work that they do. Collectively, they're receiving about $1.5 million a year that they then can turn around and put into other prevention programs, into the tribal programs. So we're really pleased with that. We have a strong tribal-state collaboration group. We're working on disproportionality issues with the tribes, and really not only partnering with them, but beginning to help them take some ownership for some of the prevention work. So we're really pleased with the way that's going. The Rasmussen Foundation has given us $500,000 to implement a national reform called Family to Family. We've begun in Anchorage. Early results are showing very positive outcomes for children. We hope that next year we'll be able to take this initiative statewide. There are almost 30 states, I believe, who are initiating the Family to or who have begun the Family to Family initiative. Alaska is one of the newer states, but we've been just really heartened by some of the strategies that this brings to us. I'm very thankful to the Rasmussen Foundation for providing us this opportunity. The Annie E. Casey Foundation is providing us with at least $1 million worth of technical assistance every year on this, as well as on some statewide initiatives and helping us to learn how to use data differently, to look at longitudinal data to find out what is happening to our children as they come into care. Casey Family Programs out of Seattle is also investing in our system. They've chosen Alaska as one of 7 states that they will target for services. And so they bring to us a great deal of technical support and expertise. They're helping us to develop a kinship care support program, which we really need. Almost half our children are in relative homes. And so we do need to begin to develop some programs that support those relatives in a different way than we're now doing. Again, as I said, Annie E. Casey is helping us, and Casey Family Programs out of Seattle, again, is helping us to look at disproportionality. And so they've initiated some national work, and they are using Alaska as one of the states that will help to develop the body of research around disproportionality.
What do you mean? I'm sorry. What are you saying?
Okay. We have, as I said before, almost 63% of the children in our care and custody are Alaska Native. Compared to the population, we know that 63% of the population is not Alaska Native. And so we are seeing more Alaska Native children coming into the system and staying longer than children of other races. And so we want to look at that. We want to see if there are training issues for our staff. We want to see if there are training issues for reporters, mandated reporters. We want to look at our decision-making points to make sure that we are not biased in some unconscious way and institutionalizing.
Mm-hmm. And you're doing this with the tribes also?
Yes, absolutely. They are at the table with us every step of the way, and we've had one convening. We will have a second convening. We've had tribal elders and tribal partners at the table. And Casey has paid for all of this, paid for the transportation for all of the tribes to actually join us in Anchorage from all over the state. We were had representatives from Barrow and from the North Slope, from Bethel, from all over the state. So, and that was not just tribal social services. We did invite many of the tribal elders joined us. It was a wonderful conference. And so we'll be continuing that again in March. We formed some teams to look at things regionally, to see if there were issues regionally that were creating this disproportionality, bringing more children into care, more Native children into care. And so the teams went back, committing to do something in their regions, and we'll get a report back on that.
If I could follow up, what effect, if any, did the Attorney General's statement regarding the relationship with the Indian Child Welfare Act and tribes, did it have any negative impacts in your relationship with tribes? Are they kind of, are any of them seem to be standoffish as a result of?
To my knowledge, I believe that Tanana Chiefs is taking the decision back to court. But in terms of our work, and we are trying to watch this closely, it has not changed much for us. On the social services level, we have pretty good relationships with the tribes and the tribal organizations. And so we are continuing to nurture those relationships, providing the 4E money to help them, and providing technical assistance for them to help develop some prevention programs. In terms of investigations, which is really what the CRH decision actually brought forth, and just as a, I guess for the rest of the committee, we recently got an Attorney General's opinion related to the CRH decision, which came out several years before I came. Several years ago. And basically it says now that we must do all investigations of reports of harm, whether they are Native children or non-Native children. Prior to this decision, some tribes were doing their own investigation. I believe Tanana Chiefs and the Native village of Barrow being two. Right now we are mandated, according to that decision, to do all investigations. So the sovereignty issue, I'm sure, is underlying, and Tanana Chiefs will address that in court. That is pretty much how it's playing out, but it is not affecting social services directly.
Mr. Chairman, can I just invoke the home rule on acronyms? I don't know what CRH is.
I'm sorry, that is, it's somebody's initial, right?
We'll have to put a box there like they do at Toastmasters for Hot Connors, acronym counter, quarter.
That's how the decision actually came down. It comes down as CRH, which I guess those of you who are attorneys probably know more than I do, but many of the Supreme Court decisions come down that way with initials. So honestly, I don't know whose initials they are, but somebody's initial.
Thank you.
Okay. We have a number of ongoing challenges. We need to continue improvement on our outcomes, especially related to permanency. One of the major reforms of our system that we need to work on is the supports and the services and the actual screening and approval of our foster homes. We are beginning to move the process of doing thorough assessments up front, and we begin that next month. This will create some need for some new positions. We'd like to continue our workforce development, recruitment, and retention committees Our current vacancies as of today is as low as it's ever been. We have only 18 vacancies in our social work, in our frontline area. So we're really, really proud of that. It includes all filling all of the new positions. This also includes two supervisory positions. So really, in our front line, as of today, we have only 16 vacancies and two supervisor vacancies. So, our automated ORCA system is a wonderful system, but it too needs to have some ongoing resources and support. We need some ongoing training for our social workers. We have wonderful training through the university for our new workers, but they then go back to the field and get very little else once they go back. We need the ability to really visit our children and families monthly. That's a desired outcome for Alaska. That's very difficult and very expensive. And we need to help provide more services in our rural communities. And so that brings us to our budget requests for next year. We're requesting 34 new positions to reduce workload, especially in the rural areas. We need some new positions, ongoing positions, to support our automated system. The system is up. We did make a substantial investment in the system itself. But moving forward, we need some positions to continue to support that. And one of the reasons for that is child welfare is ever-changing. The laws change on us, and every time a law changes, either in state law or in federal law, we have to reprogram the system. And so we need some ongoing resources to be able to do that. We would like to be able to provide a great deal more training than we are currently providing to improve our practice outcomes and also to assure some consistency across the state. We want to focus on the retention of social workers, and payment of licensure fees continues to come up. We have a lot more social workers in our system than social workers who are licensed. Many, many other organizations do pay for the social work license. And so we are finding that we are losing our professional level of staff so people can go other places to work and have their licenses paid for. We'd like to request some funds to pay for our foster home recruitment expenses, to expand the pool of resources that are available to children. We want to expand our post-adoption services to stabilize adoptive families who take on the very, very difficult children that we place with them. And we would also like to restore some of our family preservation funding to enhance the service array in all of our communities to keep families together. That completes the formal part of the presentation. I'd be happy to entertain any questions that the committee might have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much, Ms. Kanai, for your data here. There's a number of things I'd like to talk this afternoon with you about, and I think I'll start with the federal oversight. Do you have a citizens review panel? And maybe you can answer a couple things here. And if you do, who's permitted to participate in those reviews? Are parents allowed to participate in the reviews?
Okay. We have a citizen review panel, which has been newly established. And the citizens review panel is made up of citizens who will begin to review our policies and procedures. They can, if they want, review cases. They are still in their infancy, and we actually have, at this point, where's Teresa? We have someone here with us actually this week from the National Resource Center on Child Maltreatment, helping us to develop some protocol and some plans for the Citizen Review Panel. Right now, they are holding town hall meetings. We've had one in Wasilla. We have one next month in Juneau. There will be one in Bethel, and I believe the fourth one will be in Anchorage. And so they will hold at least 4 town hall meetings per year to be able to get citizen input. Now, a number of years ago, there was something called a foster care review board, and that was different. So I'm not sure if that's what
you're
referring
federal,
to.
Through the chair, the federal regulations, as I understand it, do demand that you have a citizens review panel.
Okay,
and
right.
So My question was then, is it functioning?
It is in its infancy, but it is functioning.
So yes. It has not functioned to date?
They've had one town hall meeting. They have developed a core group of members made up of citizens from the communities throughout Alaska. Do we have 10 members yet? Six members at this point. They are recruiting themselves. So.
Okay, so this will be a new program that you're going to institute, and you haven't. You're not there yet.
Okay. Not, okay, it's not fine. Totally.
So next time around, we can ask you how it's functioning.
Yeah.
Okay. My other line of questioning has to do with the numbers of employees that you have. From your information for us, well, let me preface this by saying what I have problems with this data. One is that the incidence of child maltreatment in foster care troubles me dearly. If the national standard is 0.57%, and we started at a 1.91%, and you only asked for 26 people to help monitor that situation, social worker, the last time when were those hired?
We've started hiring probably at the end of July, and hiring went through November, I would estimate.
But you're 18 short already. You still have 18 that you need to hire. Is that correct from your numbers? I'm trying to make some sense of the numbers that you say.
We have total vacancies as of today. We have 18 vacancies in our social worker, children's service specialist, and supervisor.
Okay, so they aren't necessarily involved in just the incidence of maltreatment? That's just one piece of the equation?
Right.
So, but you're still 18 short. So in theory, you've only hired 8 of the 26?
We've hired all 26 of the new positions. We have, I believe, 230, I don't have the total. We have...
Okay, maybe I can rephrase it. How many are on the street?
We have 231 positions and 18 are vacant.
Okay, but how many are on the street then? Is that what you're asking for? When you asked the question last time around, we need 26 more people. The 26 more people that I understood that you needed were people to be on the street to interface with the problem.
Okay.
Not administration, not any of that. And when you ask us for 34 this time around, are you asking for 30 more to be on the street, or you're asking for...
Not all are on the street positions. We've asked for, I think the new request is for 8 positions to support ORCA, 12 positions to address the foster parent issues, it's 20... and the rest, and 14 to be placed in the rural offices, on the street positions, frontline social work positions.
Okay, well, I'm through the chair with your indulgence. I guess my question is, as troubling as this is, because it's so troubling to me, and I think it's troubling to all Alaskans that we're in this predicament, you're telling me, by what you just said to me, if I read it right, that you're only going to, out of the new folks, 12 new folks will be directly related to looking at these incidences and trying to bring them down to a manageable number or whatever, if there's such a thing. I'm not sure there is such a thing. But is that enough folks? I mean, is it a Band-Aid approach, or can we stem the flow or the tide here and so that it...
Well, it's
continue?
Not only about positions. It's about working differently and building the system in a different way than it now exists. And it's an estimate, but until we get somebody in here to actually do our workload study, we're not going to know for sure. And before I have that workload study, I didn't feel it was responsible to come to you for any more positions. What we need to do in relation to the particular outcome, that is maltreatment of children in foster care, is we need to be able to screen license, recruit, and train foster parents differently. Right now, we have what we call a standard-by-standard approach. That is, if you apply to us to become a foster parent, there are certain standards that you need to meet. And we have workers who go to the home, spend about 3 to 4 hours, and they measure the doors and the windows, and they talk with the families about the kinds of children they feel they can handle, and they do sort of kind of a home study. Many of our children who go into foster care wind up being adopted by their foster families. At the point they adopt or they request to adopt, they then get a very thorough family assessment. We are proposing with these new positions to move that thorough assessment up front, that it makes no sense to do a kind of a cursory home study and then wait until the family wants to adopt to say, yeah, you're qualified, or no, you're not. And so we think that by doing that, we will also begin to be able to screen and to train our foster parent applicant pool so that our kids are safer when they come to us and they spend time in those foster homes. Right now, as I pick up a record, and I see a licensing file, I see just that. I know that they've met some standards. I don't know a lot about the family. And so last week, we did some training for all of our current licensing staff, and we have some staff that already exists, so that they could begin to do, when they will begin to do their jobs differently. So it's not just about positions, although we do need some positions. We also have no support positions. Our foster parents take very, very difficult, behaviorally disturbed children into their homes. If you don't have enough workers to actually support those foster parents and to actually provide services to those foster families, they become overwhelmed, and sometimes that does result in abuse or neglect of those children. And we see that much more often than we'd like to see it. And so what we are proposing then is to create some units where we do nothing but support the foster families, train the foster families, and make sure that when they feel overwhelmed, that there's somebody out there that they can come to. And then we will also have the licensing staff who will continue to make sure that the home meets physical health standards.
Well, I appreciate that through the chair. I'm very concerned by this, especially if it's a national average that we're not even close to meeting. And, I grew up here. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, mm-hmm. like a number of folks here. And when I was a young man, there were a lot of children's homes. In fact, there were two very close to our homestead. And in both of those cases, there was a number of folks that were young, just my age and so forth and so on, that had been taken out of other situations. And they actually had wonderful homes that they did for them. And there were partnerships with different religious organizations that actually helped run those. And Fairbanks, we still have Presbyterian Hospitality House, which does a great number of those things, I know, with the state. And I'm just concerned that somehow we haven't learned anything over the last 59 years I've been here, that we still keep fooling around with trying to take kids out and put them someplace where they don't get the service that they really need. We've either forgotten them or whatever we've done to get to this stage, and that we're really not solving the problem by putting more people in the field necessarily, or more foster homes doesn't solve the problem. The problem is another social issue rather than that. But the definition that we should have, that these kids are at risk, and that we as a state, we have a responsibility to make sure these kids are not at risk. And so I just want to do everything I can do to make sure that we follow through with this. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the presentation. And actually, I'm going to follow up a little bit on what Representative Holm was talking about. The area of adoption is an area of interest of mine. And I'm looking at your goals here. Your goal is to have 24% of the kids adopted in less than 24 months, but we're currently at 18%, or 18.7, which tells me that 81% of our kids are in the system more than 2 years, which is troubling to me, because obviously you want to get these kids into families and homes as soon as possible. Why is our, well, first of all, why does it take 24 months? That's 2 years. That seems like a long time. And I know it's complex. You want to research the family. And some of these kids are hard to place because they're troubled kids. But 18% seems low.
It's definitely, it's troubling. It's troubling to us because it is going in the wrong direction. We want that figure to move up. There are a variety of reasons. Not enough judges to actually hear all the cases when they need to be heard. Not enough attorneys to actually take the cases to court. We also have, substance and alcohol abuse is a tremendous problem. It's not something that can really be solved overnight. Last time I looked, it takes a parent seven attempts to actually go into successful recovery, seven attempts at treatment to actually move into successful recovery. And when does a worker say, okay, this is your last chance? They're difficult decisions to make. Again, I think some of it is training issues. I clearly believe that our staff need better training around when do you say enough is enough. But I think there are a lot of pieces of the system that are outside of OCS that are also barriers. There is a court improvement project that also we do sit on the court improvement project. And we hear frequently that the judges cannot always schedule the hearings as timely way as they would like. They're just a lot. Then there's the issue of services. Certainly a court cannot terminate parental rights if they feel we have not given the services that the family is entitled to or should have. And sometimes those services are not available. And so that's been another issue.
Okay. I appreciate that, especially the judicial system that is a little slow. But is there a shortage of parents who want these kids?
Because we need to recruit more.
That's one of the things I've heard from other people who want to adopt kids. And I've heard from a lot of families who want to adopt kids that it's just easier, faster, quicker to adopt internationally than it is within our own state.
We've begun something called Wednesday's Child, which appeared for the first time last week. You'll be seeing on the Superstation every other week a child who is legally free to be adopted. We do need more adoptive parents, but lots of times people come to us and they want to adopt young, healthy babies, and that's not the type of child that we have. The federal government has recognized this. There's a campaign called Adopt U.S. Kids, and those ads should be appearing here in Alaska fairly soon. And that is Adopt U.S. Kids. It's focused on adopting children from the foster care system. But our children are not healthy babies, and generally the international adoptions are the ones, they are the babies that people are waiting to adopt. So that's a piece of it. We also have something called the Interstate Compact on the Placement of Children. We have many children who are placed with relatives, especially Alaska Native children, who may be placed in the state of Washington or Oregon with a member of their tribe. We have to go through the Interstate Compact in order to finalize those adoptions. And that's totally dependent on the other state's ability to do the home studies.
Good. May I follow up? Sure. Thank you. Another question.
Sure.
You mentioned about the improved supervision for frontline workers. Mm-hmm. Your ratio is currently 7-1, and you'd like to get that to 5-1. You know, one of the comments I typically hear is that we're too top heavy. In other words, we have too much management and not enough workers. And it sounds like you're looking at maybe going the other way and get more supervision and not necessarily less workers, but I guess your workload study will indicate. I'm just wondering if 5-1 is the right ratio. Maybe it should be 8-1.
Well, I think 5-1.
You talk to the supervisors, I'm sure they'll tell you that.
Right. what we find is that our supervisors don't really have time to supervise. They react to emergencies. And because turnover in child welfare is so high, the only stable force you have sometimes is the supervisor. And so in order to keep the focus and to maintain the work at the level we need to maintain it, to keep our children safe, we really need to have supervisors who have time to supervise, who have time to review cases, who recognize things before it becomes an emergency. So our supervisors do an awful lot. They just really do. And the other thing I think that is, if you read any study about retention, I don't care if it's at IBM or in child welfare, clearly the main issue for people in terms of retention, the major factor is supervision. And we see that when people leave, they either say, we had wonderful supervision, or I left because I had no supervision or not good enough supervision. Also in Alaska, we have a number of offices that are very small, where we have two or three people. We have distance supervision, which makes life difficult, especially for new workers. So it becomes an issue for us. Again, it's an issue sometimes of workload as opposed to caseload. So whereas I would not put a supervisor in an office with only two workers, I certainly would want to have a supervisor maybe in Fairbanks that could at least travel to a variety of offices to be able to supervise our two- and three-person offices. Now, we do that now, but it's difficult to do with the number of supervisors we have.
Yeah, and normally I like to have my supervisor as far away as possible.
We like to have them as closely as possible.
I'm in a different line of work.
Yeah. As part of our quality assurance system, we're building not only case review but also supervisory review, so that a supervisor is required to pull a sample of cases every month and review them.
Okay, and I think you touched on the turnover factor, that just it's kind of inherent in this type of work, mm-hmm. a high turnover rate. And that would probably explain why you still have 18 vacancies and you still want 34 more, because you've had some turnover, it sounds like. Because you said you had filled the 26 vacancies.
Right. These vacancies have not been long-term vacancies. We have, I think, one long-term vacancy. We're having some trouble in Nome filling a supervisory position. But most of these are recent vacancies. And often vacancies are created by promotion and resignation, retirement. And we've had a number of people retire this year, and we've also had some opportunities for promotion. The 26 new positions created, I think, two or three new supervisory positions, so we've been able to do that. The family-to-family initiative created four new promotional opportunities in Anchorage, and the independent living positions created new opportunities for staff. So I believe the last time I looked, 37% of our turnover was for promotion or lateral transfer within OCS.
Okay. And the commissioner will love this question. Is our turnover where they actually, when I think of turnover, I mean, I'm thinking they actually leave the system or leave government and take some other job. Is our turnover rate any higher than other states for this?
Our turnover rate right now is at 20.2%, and probably that's a little high. Lisa, do you have any idea?
I don't know what the national average is, but I know states that have much higher turnover rates. So I think it varies widely. I don't know what the next. One time Mexico had a very
high
turnover rate, and they worked hard to bring it down. So.
Yeah, it's just a very tough, stressful,
yes,
tough job.
It is.
And pay isn't probably near as much as it should be for that type of job. Okay, thank you very much,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Jewell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I really appreciate the position that you're in. You have it.
Thank
you. Incredibly challenging task, and I think what I'm hearing you say, it seems to be difficult to shift paradigms and get people doing something different with a different focus, maybe even for different reasons, other than being purely reactive creating an atmosphere and an environment of partnership so that your workload becomes a little bit more spread out. And for that, I applaud you. It's been a struggle as I've, the short time that I've been here. A couple things that I wonder about, though, as I was listening to you. Are we too quick or too slow to terminate parental rights?
Gee, Lisa Diemer asked me that this morning. I think there are I hate to say this, but I think there are times we are too quick and times we are too slow.
So it must be just right.
You know, the Adoption and Safe Families Act, which is the federal act that really guides our practice, does say to us that children who have been in care for 15 of the last 22 months, if the parents have not been successful in reunification plans, that we should then go for termination of parental rights. We don't always do that, but we don't always do it for a good reason. I think that our service array, we just don't have enough services around the state, and so when you get to the 15th month and a parent has not been able to get into treatment or receive the mental health services that we need, that they need, we are often reluctant to do that termination. And so, you know, I think sometimes for good reason we delay it, and I think at other times we don't move fast enough. But we are trying to change practice. We are trying to, we need to train our workers, I think, around permanency issues.
Considering that your caseload is 63% Alaska Native.
Yes.
Is there much done by the way of cross-cultural kinds of training? And I'm familiar with some out there because I've gone through some, taught some. And I'm just wondering if that's occurring, especially with some of your new workers and things of that nature.
Honestly, our new workers get training on ICWA. They don't get enough training on cultural diversity. We are hoping to move forward with that, and that is part of the training package that I'm requesting for next year. Through our work with disproportionality and KC Family Programs, they've already provided one training for all of our staff and all of the tribal staff, some cross-system training here in Juneau. And we're hoping that they'll move forward with that in Anchorage and some other areas. But we need more of it. We really do.
I would tend to agree. If your caseload's that big, mm-hmm. and you're trying to do other things
as well,
So, and then finally, with and the issues of adoptions, having gone through the process of adopting a child myself, we utilize the tribes before we went to the court to make it final. And I'm wondering if the tribes are in a position to help you through the adoption process where it would be appropriate.
Yeah, yes. We can approve a tribal adoption without a termination of parental rights. And so we've just done some training with both the tribes and with our staff around the ability to do a tribal adoption in Alaska.
Because it seems to cut through a lot of mustard.
Right.
And the time frame mm-hmm. is so much shorter. We were looking at a two-year wait, and we ended up in months with the state system. It's a resource.
Yes. And we are trying to utilize that resource. Again, we have a very active tribal-state collaboration group, and when we see an issue that is cross-cultural, we try to attack it head-on together. And that is one of the issues. Joanne did some training last month for the group, and we're hoping that when they went back to the tribes so that we do begin to see more tribal adoption. Looking forward to that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Stoltz.
Thanks. The insightful program of Mr. Holman-Meyer got rid of most of my questions. Of those that of those that are in the system, how many of them are family members that are related to foster parents that are being cared to take care of their own relatives?
Okay, we have two types of relative homes. Some relatives, I believe we have about 600 children in relative homes. Some of them are in licensed foster homes because some relatives choose to become foster parents. And then we have other relatives who choose to go a different way, but who can also take care of their relatives, but they receive public assistance or TANF money. So we have about 600 children in relative care. I think I have exact numbers.
Mr. Chairman, which is what percent? I didn't hear.
I can tell you in a minute. 30%.
I didn't hear the first number. Well, I don't know the first number. I'm missing a big ingredient, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we have, as of September 04, we had 626 children in relative care. Did I answer your question? I'm sorry.
No, we'd established it was 600.
Oh, you wanted to know how many. 31% in relative homes.
So almost, Mr. Chairman, almost one in three are with a family member. Mm-hmm. That's a dynamic when a lot of us are going up to last. And that's families used to take care of that. Now that's transitioned over to government.
Just another interesting number is that almost 59% of our children do go home. They are released from our custody back to their parents. So.
Representative Weirach.
When Representative Meyer was talking to you about the percentage of children that are not being placed in homes, what percentage of those have fetal alcohol syndrome or fetal alcohol effect children, do you know?
I honestly do not know that. I do know we see a lot of fetal alcohol affected or fetal alcohol syndrome children. We don't always know when they are placed that is the case. And so most of our children, especially our young children, are screened for fetal alcohol syndrome or fetal FA, fetal alcohol affected.
And after the screening, what is your result? What are the results?
Well, we then develop some. If they're in our care and custody, we can then begin to develop some services and service plans for those children. Sometimes
quantitatively.
Pardon me.
Quantitatively, what after the testing? Do you know what percentage of them have tested positive?
I'm sorry, I do not know, and I'm not sure that we actually track that in an aggregate kind of way, sort of. An individual case by case. Now, possibly, and I'm not certain. I'd have to find out and get back to the committee. But we may track that in ORCA. I'm not sure.
Do you know the answer to the question?
I'm sorry. We don't have a report. Right now, because ORCA is so new, we don't have all of the reporting capability that we'd like to have. Hopefully, within the next 6 months, we will be able to bring these reports out of the system.
Just for information, when did you start with ORCA?
September the 7th, September the 4th, September the 7th of this past year.
Any other questions?
This is a question so you won't have a doubt about where I'm coming from. I'm a person who believes that the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act was supposed to settle some things, and that politicians and judges and white and Native leaders have had a lot of division caused in Alaska by not understanding that agreement, that act. And I guess where I'm curious is, you are working with nine organizations that our tribal organizations. Is there anything you're doing, and if so, I'd like to know the statutory reason behind it that either reinforces, enables, or funds, or leans in the direction of tribal government at the master.
Honestly, I don't know the answer to that question. Do you mean that would look to sovereignty, or are you talking about sovereignty issues, or
tribal government in any form? And I guess it's my question is that an issue in the state that, to my knowledge, was settled, but is often brought up in question, and certainly know there a lot of people disagree on the whole area. I'm trying to focus narrowly in your department and see if you are going to use race-based organizations to partner with. Then do you have any groups that are black, you know, the African-American or Mexican-American or other groups that you're working with, or Irish-American for that matter? Or is it narrowly limited? And I'm just curious, are you doing anything that is setting us toward leaning in the direction of recognition of tribal governments and tribal sovereignty, if you want to use that term?
On the child welfare side, I don't believe we are. There are two tribes, Native Village of Barrow, and Joanne, help me. There are two small tribes that have petitioned the federal government for exclusive jurisdiction over child welfare cases. One is the Native Village of Barrow, and the other is...
McCalla?
No.
Chiba?
Thank you. Sorry. And so they can, if they want, have their own child welfare systems, do their own investigations and whatever. However, that means they have to find their own funding as well. CHIVAC and Native Village of Barrow have both asked us to partner with them, and so in effect we have concurrent jurisdiction with them, and we're working with them as we work with other tribes.
So you're not sure, but you don't think so?
I don't think so. No. Joanne, can you shed any light on that?
Can we get you to come forward and state your name so that we have it on the record?
Oh, for the record, my name is Joanne Gibbons, and I'm the program administrator for the Office of Children's Services. It's really not an area, going through the chair, that we have really thought about in terms of whether we're having any impact or, in terms of tribal government relations or that whole issue. There are tribal courts. The CRH decision talked about the ability for us to transfer cases to tribal court jurisdiction based on a petition by the tribe through their court, and that transfer can happen under certain circumstances, provided there's a certain level of service, and there's certain things that are demonstrated in our courts for that transfer to happen. How that fits into the big picture of...
I'd be interested in any statutory side in what you are doing there, because I'm certainly not speaking against the well-meaning intentions of the organization or even the outcomes necessarily at all. It's a narrow question, and I'm interested in the answer to that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Try to get more information.
Any other questions? Seeing none, Marcy, thank you. And
thank you.
Department for being here. No meeting tomorrow. No meeting Monday. On February 1st, we'll take up two bills. House Bill 47, which is to extend the Board of Real Estate Appraisers, and HB 64, which will extend the Board of Health, public
accountancy. Whose bill is that, Mr. Chairman?
I'm not really sure who that is. It probably has something to do with the county.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's why we need to sit on for 2 or 3 months.
Well, we're early into the session. I don't see why we need to move some of these things out right there.
Is there a provision that if a board is added, a board is taken away?
No, I don't believe there is. It might be a good idea to, if you introduce a bill, you have to get rid of two.
I think it is for a law degree, though, isn't it? Where you get the bar and don't.
No. Beyond my realm. Thanks for being here, and we'll close out the meeting. And thank the department for being here, Commissioner. You too. Thank you. We're good.
Actually, we're gonna.
See, just on a political basis, I'm voting.